Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to all of the beautiful, beautiful followers. We have edition 86 or episode 86.
It sounds good to me.
With us today, we have an incredible giant in the world of dentistry.
He's huge.
Like I said, I call him
works out.
The rock of dentistry. And he's a great friend. He doesn't need no introduction. He goes by the name of
David Wong.
Yes.
Dr. David Wong.
Of course, that's not his name.
Dude, glad to have you, man. Thanks for joining us. And apologize for the snafus of technology, but hey, we made it happen.
Hey, we got him. We have us with us also, Soli's dad, the dad of Rick Sullivan.
Good to be here, guys.
The millennial dad.
The millennial dad.
The millennial dad who has a better episode on, I'm going to go back again, episode 6 for people that like to know Soli's journey and the path for partnership, the unicorn partnership. But without further ado, David, sorry, we took the first few minutes, but go ahead and please tell us, where are you and how you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day. He is actually, by the way, he's also the Insta famous, one of the most respected Perio accounts. He's got two accounts, Plaque China and also David Wong. And I think David Wong is more like a selfie account, I would say.
I was going to ask you about that.
It is more, yeah, for sure.
It's like what you have for breakfast and lunch and stuff.
So this is funny because today I had a story about him on Instagram asking questions. Like all the followers ask questions about that you want me to ask David. And about 80% of the things they wanted to ask him was not related to Perio.
That's why he's
I love him because the way
that's why his selfie account has more followers than
he's incredible. So thank you for joining us, man, all the way from the streets of Tulsa.
Hey Doc,
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Introduce yourself, give us the background, tell us how you got into this crazy game.
All right, let's see, where do we start. So my name is David Wong, as you guys have mentioned. I'm a periodontist. I practice in Tulsa, Oklahoma, born and raised in Oklahoma. So you guys are probably picking up a little bit of a Southern accent, and that's me, the Asian guy with the Southern accent.
The Asian guy with a very thick accent.
Yeah, for sure.
But I love it, though. It's so funny when you see him, when you meet David in person, you expect him, when he starts talking, you're like, wait, that's not him.
Wait a second.
Wait a minute.
He lectures exactly. In cowboy boots. I saw him at DS World. It was great.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's right.
David, we want you to take us back to when David was in, maybe say, like the reason that David chose dental school to go. And for a lot of our followers that and listeners that are young dentists and dental students, they want to know how to be cool, how to be hip, how to be a badass periodontist. Like you said, tell us, share the journey from around that time that you picked this crazy profession.
Yeah. So first of all, I'm kind of a nerd at heart anyway, so I don't know if I have a true authentic coolness factor or not, but I enjoy what I do. But as far as back in dental school, you know, my whole intent was just to try to get through, right? And just graduate.
Where'd you go?
Strangely enough, I went to University of Oklahoma College of Dentistry.
Awesome.
But I also went to college at OU as well, so I'm a Sooner through and through. But I did my perio residency at University of Missouri in Kansas City. But going back to why perio, I mean, like I said, I'm kind of a nerd at heart, but I wasn't a very good dental student, actually, which is kind of weird because I went through college, you know, pretty unscathed and did really well. But dental school is tough. I didn't do very well at all. I was actually kind of just middle of the class. And I picked perio just because, you know, it was kind of the perio department. I don't know how it is in other dental schools, but in our school, it was like the nerdiest group of guys you could ever meet. But I loved them to death. I liked the surgeries they performed and stuff. So I kind of just volunteered a lot in grad perio whenever I could. Just kind of took a liking to it. And then
did Oklahoma have a fun, like a pretty cool period program? Because I think that, like, you know, it's so interesting how your idea of what a specialty is in dental school becomes so different once you graduate. Because, like, I thought perio was like the bane of my existence, and now it's probably like the one specialty that if I went back and did, I may do.
Isn't that crazy to think about?
It's ironic. It's crazy.
It's only a few years out of school, but that's how we felt.
No, totally. So how was your? Right. Was it because you just? If it wasn't cool, then or like, was it? What made you go in? What want to go into that?
Yeah. So I mean, it's kind of part of it is I kind of backed into it by ruling out what I was terrible at.
Okay, you know, that's a good point. Yeah.
I mean, according to the clinical instructors, I mean, I didn't have very good hands. You know, I couldn't cut. I was poor in operative dentistry. I couldn't cut any cavity preps. Back then, I'm old guy, so I just kind of date myself. I have never to this day ever done a posterior composite ever.
Wow,
not one time.
Good for you.
Okay, we didn't have that back then. We did amalgam. We did four or five surface amalgam, so I could carve the hell out of some amalgam. But that's what my school was. So anyway, I wasn't very good in operative. I couldn't carve amalgam. I couldn't pack amalgam. I couldn't take impressions. I wasn't very good at, didn't like working with kids. I couldn't bend ortho wire. I routinely perforated root canals. So I
just, so you're like, I have to do something in this profession that I don't screw up.
I like how you make it sound like, but I mean, perio.
Probably the one that hands matter the most
right now. Yeah.
That's
but
great.
I was just terrible. I couldn't do fixed. You know, I couldn't get my bridge preps to draw. I couldn't get crowns to see. I couldn't polish anything.
But I mean, I wasn't a good dentist. If you think about though, to be honest, David, I feel like in dental school, a lot of us, like, I didn't really know I would enjoy something that because the chance of the school not offering us or having a strong department in that area.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that's a big part of it. Is you see what the residency is at your school or what the vibe is at your school. And so that becomes your perspective on, especially as a whole,
I thought the perio guys were pretty nerdy, but I still liked it. I liked doing surgery. One probably redeeming quality was I was pretty fearless. So, I mean, if you left me alone to the patient, I mean, we're cutting out wisdom teeth. We're doing whatever. Right. I'm just like taking it upon myself to remove tori that weren't there. And just doing stuff, you know, I like surgery. And, but you know what I liked about surgery though, is I like the soft tissue stuff. So that's kind of how I ended up settling on perio.
So
but
then you,
I was such a shitty student. I didn't get into the OU perio program. So, it's kind of a miracle that I'm even here talking to you guys today, honestly.
So that's awesome though. Cause I mean, like a lot of people, you know, they either don't get in the first time or they don't get in the program they want. And, you know, I think it's important to say like, look, I think that's it's cool to say when you look back, you know, and I mean, it probably worked out great that you got to go to UMKC, I'm guessing, you know, in the long run.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just, I mean, I don't know. Things just kind of worked out for me. Honestly, I graduated middle of my class and I was dating my wife at the time. So, you know, kind of being a young guy in love and all that stuff, I didn't want to like go too far away.
Sure.
And I'm kind of a mama's boy. So I want to stay close to home and all that stuff. I never really lived outside of Oklahoma. So I applied to two schools. I applied to OU and I applied to UMKC. I didn't get into either at all.
Oh, no way.
But I still remember. No, I didn't get in either. And to get into UMKC at the time, you had to be in the top 40% of your class, which doesn't seem that hard. It's not like you're trying to get into ortho school. So at the time that I applied, I was right on the money. I was at 40%. I was number 30 out of 50, or I'm sorry, 20 out of 50. So I was perfect. But I didn't get in. And wow. I still remember the girl's name that dropped out. So her name was Hope. I don't remember her last name, but she took a position somewhere else. So it opened it up. And I still remember being in a clinic, seeing a patient. They paged me and I answered the phone and the UMKC perio director was like, hey, you know, the girl that you interviewed with, she ended up going somewhere else. You got a position if you want it. And, which was fortunate because the grades had just come out. And I had dropped like down to like whatever, below my top 40%. So wow. I would have been eligible to apply. So, yeah. So I got into UMKC because some girl named Hope, who I probably should figure out what her last
name is. Hope, if you're listening to this, anyway, Hope, let us know. Hope, we got to get, because yeah. Dr. Wong wants to send you some flowers.
She gave David Hope.
Yeah,
no kidding. I want to name my next born after. But anyway, so she dropped out. I got in. And to UMKC, still didn't get into OU. And then, you know, three or four people dropped out of the OU deal, and they eventually offered me a position, but I had already taken the UMKC position. So,
what year are we talking? This is before the 2000s or after the 2000s?
Oh, you guys want to know how old I am? So I'm 44. So this would have been 1990.
You just missed the cut for millennial. Just missed the cut.
Hey, welcome to the old guys, Doc. I'm right here. I was 88. So
yeah, I feel good about it. You know, but
I feel good.
But yeah, that's been my journey. I mean, it's kind of anticlimactic from what everybody probably thinks they were going to hear. Everybody probably thinks I was like a 4.0 student and top of the class and could just pick any specialty in any school, but nope.
I feel like you're a very, very, very hard worker. Like nothing has been in your path. Nothing came kind of easy. You were one of those that you had to really work hard.
You know, it really depends on what it is. You know, I'm one of those guys who I'm good at a lot of things, great at hardly anything. So for me to be great at something, it does take me a lot of effort. I got to pretty much devote all my time and attention to my craft. But as far as
he's got a lot of craft, by the way. Well, I was gonna say I've seen your work, so there's some good talent.
You know
somewhere.
What's funny, David? I need to say this because this morning I posted this on Instagram, asking folks to ask questions that we were gonna do a podcast from Millennial Dennis with David, and like I said, most of these that have come in, I now shared it with Rick, Dr. Sullivan. I want him to kind of bring up some of those as we go on. But right now, we were going back to right after you graduated Perio. Share with us your journey. Why did you ever work as a private practice? Like, when did you start teaching? Like, teaching
so
and all of
good.
That.
Okay, so that's actually pretty, man, you guys are going to kick me off because we're going to run out of time. So, I graduated from Perio School with the intent of joining a big group practice in Tulsa. And long story short, the day before I was supposed to start work, I was supposed to start work on a Monday, Sunday night, 9 p.m., I called the partners after a long talk with my wife and told them that I was not going to come into work because I just didn't feel right about joining the practice.
Wow.
So I got cold feet. And I got cold feet right before the Monday, you know, the Sunday night before I was supposed to start work on Monday, and just never showed up. And so anyway, they were one of them was totally understanding, and that's because he was semi-retired. The other guy's still pissed at me to this day, which I don't blame him. You know, that's kind of one of those things where I can't blame him for being mad, but I don't blame myself for choosing myself either.
Well, it's a tough decision because I mean I talked to a girl today who's a D4. She's like, you know, I mean, these decisions are so impactful in the long haul, you know, and when we make them, I mean, the reality is we don't know much about business. Yeah. We don't know much about contracts. And so sometimes you just got to go with your gut.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was a gut, total emotional response, which I wouldn't suggest doing that all the time, but, you know, talked to my wife about it. She's like, if you don't feel good about it, I don't feel good about it. Let's just do this. So long story short, I ended up starting from scratch because, you know, Tulsa is a small town. There's not a whole lot of periodontists that are looking for associates. So I ended up starting from scratch and, you know, came up with a business plan, all that other stuff that I didn't know about because I was a health and sports science major at OU. So I didn't really know a whole lot about business.
Sure.
But anyway, it worked out. It worked out after getting turned down by a bunch of banks for loans and stuff. And, started my first practice on, you guys are not going to believe this, but my first practice cost me $160,000 to start.
Wow.
And that was my first practice for 9 years. So
what was the hardest part about starting a practice from scratch? Like the one thing you're like, gosh, didn't think about that.
Well, the biggest thing, I mean, you know, from internally, it's all about the hardest part was getting over your fear.
Sure.
And getting over the fear and the self-doubt, you know. And then, of course, you also have, you know, your would-be perio partners that are constantly telling people how shitty a person you are.
Yeah.
You know, so you're battling public opinion. You're battling all this stuff internally. So that was probably the biggest struggle, was just inside.
Yeah.
Externally, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of capital to market, you know. Keep in mind, this is 2002 now. You know, so we're borrowing money in 2002, you know, between 9% and 12%.
Yeah.
So
wow.
It's not like it was today. So
right.
You do that plus your student loans. Plus, you know, don't forget I started my practice, and then a month later I got my wife pregnant with our first child.
There you go.
So guys, I mean, it's pretty stressful. You know, you got financial stress and all this other stuff. Is your wife also a
dentist or in dental?
She's a dental hygienist.
Nice.
Does she work with you?
Yeah. You know, fortunately for her, she doesn't have to work. So she doesn't. Yeah. She hasn't worked in a while. Yeah.
She hasn't worked in a while.
She's retired.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's so similar to the conversation I had with this girl today, because she was asking these things. And I said, you know, she also would have family and whatnot. And I said that the hard part about this is, if you're going to do a startup, just you need to know that it's a lot to bite off at once. You know, you got the startup, you got the money, the loans, the family. You know, it can be challenging from that. You know, was it for you? Was it, you know, just having a strong, you know, strong wife to support you and kind of, you know, keep you? Was she kind of the rock during that time, or you know, what did you do? You know, just the forward movement.
Yeah, I would say, you know, having you know, Jennifer, my wife, is as my rock, as you would say, is definitely accurate. I mean, hell, man, when we got married, we had to pay for part of our own wedding, and we used her money that she earned as a hygienist to pay for that, you know.
Sure.
So, you know, when we got to Tulsa, we had something between $8,000 and $10,000 to our name. Like, that was our net worth.
Right.
Probably not even net worth, honestly. That was just how much money
that
we
was
had.
Just the,
so,
that was the key cash you had. Yeah.
that was the nest egg. So yeah, I mean, just her support and her belief, you know, that's the beauty of having a devoted spouse, is that they will definitely see things in you that, you know, you won't see in yourself. So she believed in me the whole time, which was very helpful, because, you know, seriously, you start off, you're just fresh out of school with no money. No experience, you know, $160,000 office.
How long did it take before you felt like, you know, we're golden, like we're off, you know, this, you know, where you could start to like relax and things were flowing and, you know, collections were coming in, patients were coming in.
I don't think he's still doing it. He's still not there. I don't think.
Yeah. You know, for me, I always see room for improvement, but whenever I felt like I was out of survival mode.
Sure. That's what I'm getting at. Yeah.
Whenever I was out of survival mode, it was probably after about year three, okay. I felt like I'm out of survival mode. I don't need to like constantly check my schedule and see who's going to show up, who doesn't show up.
Was that because it was always a constant flow?
Systems are in place. You know, systems are in place. They're flowing really well. You know, I'm not having to just, you know, hallway manage everything. So it was probably by year three, everything was really going pretty smooth.
I mean, also think about it, to come to the office or the demographic, but also the type of specialty that he has. It's a little bit different than us.
Totally.
Like
yeah.
GP versus perio back then when he did, I mean, all of those surgeries. I mean, if you had, I'm thinking that your type of business was more about, or it is like
educating the general dentist.
Not only educating, but also having that constant referrals. Like you are going to have these general dentists that always, they're going to send you people because you take care of them.
Yeah.
And their patients.
Right.
So I think it's a better, that's why it's easier to do that to, like, I feel like, than me always have to, because I'm a GP and I'm doing a lot of things that he's doing as a specialist.
Yeah, so but you don't have the
it's going to be GP. Hard for me to get GPs,
yeah,
right?
To yeah.
send. So it's pretty nice. And that's why I wanted to kind of mention, for a lot of folks that don't want to go to a specialty, this is something that you're going to always have to challenge and come against, you know?
So at this point, you're the practice is going good. Kind of start to talk about now how kind of, you know, you really went into kind of the alternative things,
teaching,
your teaching.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you know, when did dentistry become, you know, more than just, you know, taking care of gums?
Yeah. So, you know, number one, you know, first and foremost, I love what I do. Right. So, sure. You know, people always ask, you know, if you were to, you know, if why don't you retire whenever? I don't want to retire anytime soon because I love what I do. So number one, I love what I do, have a strong passion for it. But the big thing about the teaching part, so it was just born out of necessity. So,
right.
You know, whenever I started my practice from scratch, it's a fee for service practice since day one. So that made it very hard. So for me, I didn't have any money. And so I didn't have money to, you know, to send cakes and food and all this other stuff that all the cheesy stuff that specialists do. I didn't have the money to do that. So what I did was I decided to educate them. So I was one of the, you know, back then, you know, people weren't really taking a lot of photographs and stuff of their cases. So I started photographing everything. I mean, if it was a frenectomy, I was taking a picture of it. So I just started taking a boatload of pictures, gathering testimonials, putting together a little before and after, you know, sheets and stuff so I could send over to the doctors. And, you know, within 6 months, you know, I had, you know, photos of every surgery that you could imagine, not some of the crazy stuff that we're doing today, but, you know, just your basic stuff, right? Your grafts and your osseous surgeries and all that stuff. So that's what I started doing, is gathering that, started a little study club, started putting on little small CE courses, you know, for 10 people, 8 people. You know, I've even done courses for one person, you know, because that's all that would show up. And so that's how it started. And then eventually, you know, what I wanted to do is make everything official. So to make everything official, I decided let's write some articles for some, you know, publications. The problem is it's kind of a who you know type thing. I didn't know anybody.
Yeah, very much.
So back then, we would publish in things like Dentistry Today or Dental Town or, you know, other journals that have, you know, that are not even around anymore. So we did that, you know, that's what I did anyway. And just wrote some articles and throwaway journals, just made a shit ton of copies of them and distributed them. And, you know, when it's in somebody else's journal, it kind of made it more official. But the other thing that it does, it also triggers, you know, scouts and people from other companies like, you know, my major sponsors today, you know, like Dentsply, Sirona, you know, BioHorizon, Strom, and all them. They notice, you know, they're looking for their products in these case reports, and they would notice whenever I use them, they would call me and say, hey, you know, we've got such and such gig in whatever town. We're going to give you $500 for it. Will you do it? Back then, $500 was a shitload of money. So I would do any. I would speak for
sure.
$150, $500, whatever. You know, so that's how I got started. That's how the speaking gig started. And then, you know, that got to a point where I was like, well, I could put on my own courses. You know, so I started doing that, and that went really well. But you know, for me, I just eventually, you know, we got up to 3 children in our household. You know, Jennifer wanted to stop doing hygiene to focus on the kids. So eventually, you know, we just had to quit doing our own CE. And at about that point, you know, the practice was doing good and my speaking engagements were from the other companies were, you know, keeping me pretty busy. So I didn't need to do my own stuff anymore. That was that.
It's crazy. I mean, you can't do it all. I mean, I don't know how you even do that much. I mean, I'm still trying to find, I mean, with 3 kids, balancing that work. It is a challenge to say the least, for sure.
Well, you know, and people always ask me that too. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but you know, if you follow me on Instagram or whatever, you'll notice that I wake up around 7 a.m. and I don't go to bed till about 3 or 4 in the morning. So that's one way that I kind of, I cheat the system a little bit by only sleeping 4 hours a day.
Yeah, I need to try that.
So, you can't try that.
I'd be grouchy in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get up earlier. That's my big thing. Someone told me that this week that I need to start getting up before meditating and getting up and going. I think it probably would be
good. Yeah. I used to do meditation at 5:30 in the morning. And, you know, it is. It's just that, you know, you can't go to bed at 4 and wake up at 5:30. You know, that's not possible. So I couldn't do that anymore.
What's your favorite part about being a periodontist? Like your favorite, you know, what do you like to do the most?
Procedure wise, I'm more of a soft tissue grafting guy. So, okay. Or soft tissue manipulator. You know, that's what I do. I grow and take away gum tissue. That's probably my favorite thing to do. I love dental implants, but usually, you know, if I think about my favorite dental implant cases, they're the ones where it offers some type of a soft tissue challenge. So
how much do you think we're under, do you think we're under diagnosing or under treating, soft tissue around implants?
You know, I think that's, you know, I think generally speaking, we probably all underdiagnose it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think it's because we're bad people or bad sure. dentists or anything like that. It's just, you know, research, honestly, is changing quite a bit. You know, when I was in school, we didn't really talk too much about plaque control around implants. We didn't talk about the importance of quality, thick tissue around dental implants. It just wasn't really that important. We talked about, you know, prosthetically driven treatment planning, right? That was the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. And with that means I need to put the bone, you know, where the crown's going to be so I can put the screw where the crown's going to be. And that's where our focus was how do we grow bone? So, and focusing on how to grow bone, you guys know now with how we do that and how we stretch the tissue and how we design our flaps, sometimes it comes at the expense of soft tissue. And we get so damn excited about growing the bone that we forget about the soft tissue. Amen. So we all underdiagnose it. It's just that, you know, how do you charge, you know, $2,500 for a ridge augmentation and then grow all this bone and you pat yourself on the back and you're high-fiving your patients and your staff about all this bone that you grow. And then you're like, oh shit, there's not enough keratinized tissue. You know, why don't we either do another gum graft, which they're like, fuck, I don't want to do that.
Right.
And I definitely don't want to do that and get charged for it. And I don't want to do it and do it for free. You know, so I think a lot of that's just kind of a, you know, part of it just is a management deal. We just, you know, for those of us who are in private practice, we just don't plan ahead. At least I don't. You know, no, I'm better now. I'm better now, but not then I would.
Well, I think overall, and Payman, tell me what you think on this, but I think that's going to be something where I'm already seeing my own shortcomings where I see that I think we're going to continue to see, you know, because that's what it is. Like let's talk about like the life of someone learning to place implants is, oh my gosh, I got the implant to stick and bone. Right. Like that's a huge thing for people. Like it worked. Okay. Well now it's like, it didn't come out. Like now let's try to, put it in the right spot, you know?
Right.
And, you know, and then, not only let's have it all the way in bone in the right spot, like let's have it prosthetically driven. Right.
Right.
And then, now anymore. Now then the next thing becomes is like, I don't have enough bone or, you know, I'm angling my implant.
And all these prosthetic, what it looks like right now, what's happening, the trend and the digital world with the CAD CAM introducing all of these management of how you can, even if you put the implant in the eye, you can put an angled abutment and make it.
Right.
something where now there's going to be a challenge where a lot of folks are like, well, do we want to grow all that bone, be invasive? So things are becoming a lot different too, at the same time of us trying to kind of use technology in order to fix some of our human errors, especially like talk about guided surgery and things like that.
Exactly. Because I think the negative to the guided surgery to sometimes is we make it sound so simple, but then we fast track people to a point where they're and all of us included, our education about how we deal with. And because look, 2 years ago, I wouldn't even have thought to even look at for attached tissue around an implant.
Right.
You know, right. and that's a problem. It's like, I can put the implant with a guide. So like, that's all fine and hunky dory. But, you know, we almost make that sound so easy, but we don't talk about, you know, the
analogs and the tissue and the biology,
all the things,
the simple
that go
biology.
Yeah.
Because think about if you really want to regenerate anything, you got to have blood and then blood and talk about gums. I mean, there's so much more.
And for the last 30 years.
Right. And I think to be honest right now, looking back at some of my cases with the 3D that I take like 4 years after, 5 years after, even if I do have some facial dehiscence, if I have that thick tissue and keratinize, and you can't even tell. There's nothing that shows you. Plus the fact that I don't really rely on that facial bone on the 3D after a while. I feel like what happens is there's like 3D is not the best in terms of finding out how much bone loss you've had. What do you agree with? Like, I feel like the scattered radiation and a lot of like PA would tell you more.
A lot of ghosting, yeah.
Right. A lot of that ghosting is not necessarily true.
Sure.
And right. Yeah. So it's interesting how, I mean, like you said.
Yeah. No, and that's honestly, I mean, that's the trend. I mean, it's like, it's such a good question that I hear so much, you know, in the perio and oral surgery world and anybody who does dental implants, you know, that's why I almost was going to miss, you know, the DIA this year is because, you know, because I'm speaking at Amos, you know, on this topic.
We can't even
Amos in December.
I know. I was excited. I was going to actually say that towards the end, talk about DIA. And so he came to DIA 1.0 or version one or whatever we called
first
it.
First edition.
But man, he was the coolest. Everybody loved the guy. And the founders put the second series of speakers for the second year, number one on our list was David Wong because of how cool and how humble he is in person, not just on social media taking selfies with his shirt down.
Yeah, there's that too.
You gotta watch his Instagram. He's so entertaining. Like, he's got some stories just in his office. Like, they're talking about, what was it the other day about the if he was being an asshole to your employee or something about what you said to the don't be a dumbass.
Oh yeah. Don't be a dumbass
to his assistant, and they made this whole series of, I don't know, there was, it's funny, it was a good story. Anyway, it talk about the social media. How did you, like, at 44, there's not too many specialists after all of the things, the teaching, but I mean, all of that over the place, then coming back and trying to create a social media presence, and I mean, you're killing it.
Well, you know, that's why it is what it is. I mean, I don't use it to attract patients. I mean, no, patients don't want to get on Plaque China and see what I'm about to do to their face. Right. And, you know, originally I was doing, you know, before and after, so if you notice, like, all my old posts from a few years ago, they're all very professional and curated. Now I'm just like, fuck it. I'm just going to be myself and have fun. Right.
Right.
And the reason it is because I found more value, honestly, just meeting people like you guys. And when I finally meet you in person, it's like, we've known each other for a while. So I found more value. And just meeting other dental people and just hanging out, you know, and hanging out and being a support professionally or just casually. I mean, I learn a lot from you people. And sometimes we just shoot the shit and laugh and tell jokes. So, I mean, it's been really good. So over time, it's kind of morphed into just me being myself and just having fun. And that's the 44-year-old me. But honestly, I probably act like I act like I did when I was 24. And, you know, it's the same person, you know. So,
no, it's awesome how you're keeping it real.
I'm just having fun with it.
You're keeping it real, and that's what social media is for the most part. At least if it's authentic and legit, where you see your account and you know exactly what David did like 2 days ago, and how, I mean everything. So that's amazing, Rick. Talk about how is it for you in the journey of a general dentist and the relationship that you have created over the years with the periodontist. Anything that you like to talk about in this terms of, like, what could it be, like, any things that would help the profession and general dentist or periodontist to communicate?
That's a little tricky for me because I try to do most of my perio and implant work myself.
Right now you are, or back in when you first started practicing?
Well, my story is my father encouraged me to go into perio school.
Oh, okay.
And that's I would go hang out with all the graduate perio like David did.
Nice.
And actually was going to apply and go. And the last conversation I had with my dad is I said, I'm going to decide to go. I want to come practice with you. And so I turned the perio down and came to practice with dad, or would have. And if you listen to episode 6, you'll learn the whole story about what happened after that. But, and so I've always had an interest in perio and always enjoyed doing it. And then since Sully came and joined the practice, you know, we both jumped in the implant world. I did a fair amount back in the 90s, lost my mojo and had a periodontist I worked with a lot over the years on that. And he was great. You know, his job was, look, I'm going to put the implant in. I'm going to send it to you with the custom abutment. All you got to do is make an impression or scan it for crown. It was easy. Yeah, and that was back in before the days of all on fours and all on X's and all that kind of stuff. But since then, you know, we have evolved into, you know, we're trying to learn and do. And that's why I first heard David was at DS World. He talked about bone grafting out in Vegas, what, 3 years ago or something.
Yep. Exactly right. It's 2017.
And so I enjoy, you know, taking people from, you know, restoring them from perial all the way up.
What do you think about David? I'd like to ask you this in return, like in your work, and now that as a speaker, as somebody that is seeing the future of what is happening with a lot of GPs are starting to do a lot of these implants, and your journey of what you've learned and everything with the movement and the technology, what do you see that how, like right now, a dental student that's listening to this, how would they know that should they do perio or should they just stick to GP, and in the future they don't, like, you know what I'm talking about, like try to kind of guide through somebody who's gone through the perio world and now periodontist and doing all of that, would you do it again? Would that be something you still find very, very unique for you?
Yeah, you know, for me, I would be a periodontist again. And matter of fact, I'd probably be more inclined to be a periodontist for me, because, you know, once again, when I was in dental school, I wasn't a very good dentist. So I picked perio, or it picked me, whichever you want to say it. But, you know, honestly, back then also, I was happy. I would have been happy if you would have just said, David, all you're going to do is get to flap and remove subgingival calculus, maybe put a bone graft in here and there. I would have been happy. You know, so all this other soft tissue stuff, the implant stuff, all this other, you know, sinus stuff and growth factors and all that stuff is just kind of icing on the cake for me. So I like it. I'm such a bad dentist that I would still choose perio. But I would say if you're a dental student, you're considering do I specialize or do I not? You know, I would probably not, you know, especially if you do like or love restorative dentistry, I would go out and be a restorative dentist and catch the low hanging fruit of surgery. That way you still get the best of both worlds. And then if you really feel like you want to specialize, go do it. I can just tell you right now, like for me, every year, you know, I'm having to do more and more stuff that I consider restorative therapy, you know, like,
sure,
you know, 5 years ago, I didn't care about, you know, making guides or, you know, provisionalizing or taking impressions or buying a digital scanner or any of this other stuff. And now I'm doing all of that.
Right.
So like it or not, all periodontists are having to incorporate, and oral surgeons too, are having to incorporate some amount of restorative therapy in their implant dentistry. So there's no getting around it. I would, if it were me, if I was a dental student with, you know, an aptitude and an interest in everything, I would be payment, man. That's what I would do.
Sure. No, exactly. Well, that's we've had that conversation so many times on things, because it's like there's this challenge of, okay, do you go into a residency and then to some degree limit yourself just because of the way that, and you know, it's ironic the way that, you know, because things were set up to not encroach on general dentist territory, you know, or whatever, when you were a specialist back in the day, right? So like you could, if you did orthodontist, you could only do ortho. Well, now it's like,
it's still that way.
It's still that way. Yet we have more, we have general dentists now doing, you know, a lot of different stuff. And so, you know, if you're like payment, you go and you learn, you take, you know, I mean, he's almost had a residency in the amount of CE that he's taken.
Almost.
Yes. Yeah, but that's my point. Is like, you know, at some point, it becomes a difference.
Yeah. He just didn't have to write a thesis. That's about it.
Yeah. Well, 300 hours is residency, right?
I mean, I think it,
you definitely 300, 400 hours in 2 years. I've taken right now, I feel like 2,200 with COIS graduating and all that. But
I feel so not small
even,
right now.
But it's not even the hours of CE I've honestly taken. It's more about the more like you.
It's the relationships, said, the mentorships. It's the
mentorship, yeah. Relationship and being inspired, because like when I go to these things now, it's so much different than even 4 years ago. Like it's so fun to hang out with a lot of folks that are same. Close, I mean, your mindset, have the same mindset and meet with them. And like, it's so, especially seeing them online now, you always have that connection on top of learning and education. So it's amazing. I love it.
Doc, talk to us a little bit about too. I think as a specialist now, you're having to become more specialized because characters like me who get in there and sometimes jump in the deep end, and I see cases that you post of some of these cases that you get referred to, and I'm going, oops, I had one like that. I had one like that, where, you know, you see some threads or you see some recession or you see, you know, the reality is,
right,
you're almost now a specialist in fixing some of our screw ups. You know, so, I mean, because some of us jump in, you know, we bite off more than we can chew.
I think it's going to happen. You know, it's going to happen. It's one of those things where I'm not mad. You know, I know there's some specialists that get bent out of shape about that. For me, I just feel like, you know, just like any other specialty, you know, orthodontists go through the same thing with general dentists, and so do endodontists, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, this is no different. Your general dentists are going to get into dental implants. As a result of that, you're going to see more, you know, peri-implantitis. You're going to see some mucogingival defects around implants mm-hmm. and things like that. It's no big deal. Just fix it. Now, where it gets a little tricky, you know, or things like, okay, you know, my dentist left cement under here. Now I've got all this bone loss around the implant.
Yeah.
You know, fix it, you know, and then fix it and don't charge me for it, or fix it and charge him for it. those are the things that get more, those are the things that are more of a nuisance to me than actually, you know, the clinical solution, you know,
sure. That makes sense.
Is the patient management. That's the hard part, because if I see cement under there and they ask, they're not stupid, right? They're like, okay, well, who left the cement there? You know?
Yeah.
And then, and if he left the cement there and I'm having to have surgery done, why am I having to pay for it?
Yep.
You know, or yeah. Why does it still not look good even after you supposedly fixed it? You know, that's another difficult conversation, but it is what it is. You know,
you go
through it just like anything else. You mm-hmm. just tell them before you get started, you know, this is the situation. This is what I think. This is what I'm, the outcome I'm expecting. This is my criteria for success, and this is when we're going to stop, right? Because if we're just going to keep doing things over and over, you know, you've heard those stories where, you know, a doctor keeps trying to fix one small problem, and the small problem becomes a bigger problem, and keeps going and going and going, and all of a sudden the patient's been through six procedures.
I'm in the middle of one of those.
They end up worse than they started, right? Yeah. And then in the patient's mind, it's like, why did you do this? It looked fine before we ever got started, right? Yep. Even though they're
it didn't hurt before.
Who called you?
A lot of
yep.
that. I feel that also in like lab work, you know, talk about lab work when you get it and you don't like it, or you feel like you could do better. You send it back and the patient gets something else. They're like, oh, I like that one more, or this one. And this, like, why do I have to get this? How many times do I have to come through this? And there's so much of that it is hard to communicate, especially with, I'm seeing your world, like you've done everything, for example, perfectly. And then yet a few months down the road or a year or two down the road, a case that could have been just prevented using simple cement protocol procedure, or having something that could have been easily prevented, didn't happen. At the same time, I do also feel like the person who did send you that patient, they probably feel like, well, I'm thinking this is what their like thing is, that, well, I've given him like $200,000 worth of patient. He can't fix like this
right.
one case or two case that I messed up. You know, like that's also right. part of their conversation or argument that they could
right.
that. Yeah.
Well, that's a very case.
It is the part of the conversational argument. And, you know, my argument is I still feel like that's a shitty way to treat your yeah. friends and colleagues.
Exactly.
You know, it doesn't matter if you gave me $1 million. You know, that's not, I mean, if this is a relationship that's based on yeah. mutual respect, we don't keep score.
Right.
You know?
It's not transactional.
Yeah. Right. If we're not keeping score here. I mean, I would argue that, you know, the $200,000 worth of work, it's not like you gave me $200,000. I had to do the work.
Yeah.
I had to do a good job.
You had to do $300,000.
Right? You had to deliver and do it.
Yeah, we had to do a good job. It's not like the patient didn't get a good service. It's not like I didn't make you look good in the process, or it's not like I didn't back refer, you know, backing up your restorative treatment plan, which
oh yeah,
you know, I may or may not agree with. So it's a two-way street. I don't like, that's the reason I don't go around, you know, baking cakes for people and taking people out to lunch and golf and all this other stuff, because I feel like that's when we're starting to keep score, and I don't like that.
I totally agree with you. I want to be friends and colleagues and be able to have conversations and not be a mutual learning from each other, not a send patients, so I'm going to send you some patients. I totally agree. I think you hit the nail on the head for that.
Yeah.
And the reality is,
if you like what I do, send me patients. If you don't, then don't.
It's exactly.
No big deal.
And the reality is like, I think us as GPs, when we start doing this type of dentistry, one, we got to make sure that we can, we've put in the effort to do it.
Right.
You know, the education, the time and whatever. And my thing is always like, look, you know, if I start having to say like, so my periodontist is Meister's David,
right.
is another David actually, you know, if I screw something up like four times in a row and I'm sitting in like four times in a row, I expect him at some point or before then I should even myself be like, you know what, maybe this isn't my cup of tea. You know, at some point, like we got to draw our own lines of
to hold ourselves accountable. Yeah. Honestly, I do get so many messages, especially online, from a lot of GPs that are treatment planning cases that they should not attempt, or showing me cases and asking questions about cases. I'm like, dude, I still like freak out. Like, that is a hard case. But they're like, well, I mean, I'm just going to do it and see how it goes. And then I get so many mess ups because they're so afraid of sending it to a specialist. They're sending it to me like, what do you think? And I'm like, I can't even begin to.
I'm not
like,
treatment planning your cases.
Like, this
over
is so bad
that, bail
like,
you out
like you said, I feel like that also goes both ways for general dentists getting out of school younger and attempting things without having proper knowledge. We talked about it with Dr. Spear last week. He was saying the same thing, that if you feel you're not ready or comfortable, don't do it. Or if, what did he exactly say? It was very nice how he put it, but did. It's pretty much you need to know what are you capable of doing and what you're not capable of doing.
Yes.
If you make a mistake, don't let it be two times or three times,
right.
Same thing. Let it out and go and watch the periodontist. I recommend a lot of my dentist friends to go and watch, like when you send a case out or refer a case out, I love going and watching how this is done. I mean, that's how you can learn what they're doing to help your patient. Next one that you see, hey, there's something that he could do that I didn't even know by going to his office. You know what I mean? Like, that collaboration could help the industry and the profession so much more than trying to say, oh, I'm going to attempt, or you're going to attempt how many.
So you only gave me two cakes this
right,
year.
Right. Like, it's so childish and irresponsible, I think, on our end.
As we kind of start to wind down here, we'll have to do this again because of
we're gonna have David Wong episode two, when he's gonna talk about his food porn. He's gonna talk about his boxings. He's gonna talk about his gym. What are those?
Yeah, here's some of the questions.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say we gotta get to the Instagram questions.
These are half of them, because half of them were very, very poor. Like, I couldn't even say them on
let's see. Here's one. Who is sexier, Dr. Wong or Dr. Rossi? I'm not going to answer that.
Dr. Wong.
Let's see. How much?
That's got to be a loaded question. He's got better hair, so and he can grow a beard.
And how often do you go to the gym? I mean, these are
the questions. There were a lot of questions about, dude, forget about perio. Tell me, how much does he bench?
Okay, yeah. let me. Y'all are doing a terrible job at the questions. Let me handle the questions.
Yes,
okay, the first question is from Charlie2113. We have to give him credit. What is your least favorite procedure in perio?
My least favorite procedure in perio is osseous surgery. Yeah, it's just too tedious, and I don't know how much time to allow for it.
All right. Well, I'm gonna piggyback that question since you said that. Are you a laser guy? Are you a LINAP guy, or do you do traditional osseous surgery?
I do both. I have two perio lasers, and I bought my first one in 2005 at the end, December 2005. And then trained in January 2006. Yeah, early adopter for sure.
I just missed you. I got trained in 2007.
Yeah, and then I bought a second one about 4 years ago because we just got kind of busy. But I do conventional osseous surgery too.
Awesome.
But I don't like either, to be honest. Yeah.
Okay, that's perfect. I am going to throw some fun questions in here. How much from Ryan.periodontics? How much do you bench, bro?
Man, it's been a while since I've tried to max out, but the last time I did 315 one time.
Wow.
Like, generally speaking, without a spotter, I can usually do like 275, you know, three times, four times, you know, without dropping it on myself.
That's fantastic.
That's about it.
315 one time.
315 one time. Was that after a day of surgery, or was it like
I always go. Yeah, I always go to the gym after work. Yeah, I always go after work.
Okay. Next question from G. Broyd. Best way for general dentists to learn more about gum grafting techniques?
That's a tough one. There's not a whole lot of CE courses about, you know, straight up perio. Yeah. I mean,
next week there is a course in Alabama. I'm going Sherry Said, real periodontics.
Hussein's doing it.
Professor.
Those guys are doing it.
I know there are three good periodontists in in Alabama. I'm going to go and learn some how to.
Who are they? Who are
So Royal Periodontics, Dr. Okay. Basma, Sherif Said. I think he's from Boston, and Professor Nguyen.
We'll have to get them on the show.
We got to get him on the show.
And Thomas Nguyen. Yeah, Sherif said he's at Boston University. Thomas Nguyen's at Harvard, and then Royal Periodontics, which is Hussein Basma. He's at the University of Alabama,
and
Birmingham.
I'm actually doing a course with him, with Basma, in Nashville in September and October on All on X.
Why are these dates? Why would I have these dates posted somewhere?
We are going to. This was more invitation only, like a 10 group of people. 10 people do live hands-on with patients.
I'm assuming
practice.
I just haven't got my invitation.
Oh, yeah. No, you're going to get it. You're going to get it. But it is, he's a prosthodontist, periodontist. It's going to be awesome. But, that's good. So next question.
Okay. From Dr. Andrew Henderson, what is the ideal protocol for maintenance visits in regards to ultrasonic, air polishing, laser debridement, et cetera?
Ooh, okay. So that's not really what I do. I don't even have a hygienist in our office.
Okay.
Interesting. Wow.
I didn't like it.
So is that, let me ask a follow-up question to that. Cause we kind of go, ooh, where I'm guessing a lot of our listeners are like, wait, that's weird or not weird, but just that we find that different is what's the reasoning behind periodontists having hygienists in the practice, and why don't you have one in your practice?
Yeah. I mean, I know that's kind of, it goes against the grain, right? It's kind of like a big thing for periodontists to have hygienists, you know, either for money reasons or for perio maintenance reasons. You know, the way I see it, I hate to draw an analogy to working out or any or fitness or anything like that. You know, if perio maintenance is all about consistency, right? It's not about who does what, because my hygienist probably went to hygiene school with your hygienist, right? They're probably the same, you know, as far as technical ability. So for me, what I was starting to see in Oklahoma was when we would alternate every 3 months, you know, I was, you know, specialists are really good at communication going back to the general dentist. General dentists are not very good at communication going back to the specialist.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Okay. Okay. So when it comes to maintenance, what would happen is
there's no system.
That's what
I feel so embarrassed when I get these letters with all kinds of stuff. I'm like, what is he talking about? This was
right. Which is fine. It's no big deal. But what ends up happening is Joe Smith is supposed to have an appointment with me today, and he calls last minute and says, "Oh, you know what? I just got my teeth cleaned last month. Didn't they tell you?" I'm like, "Well, why'd you get your teeth cleaned last month?" "Well, you know, I had a wedding. And I had to move my appointment, so I got pushed back, and they were supposed to tell you to push yours back." Well, that didn't happen, right? Mm-mm. And not only does that not happen, but radiographs don't get, you know, sent back and forth. So in all this, what ends up happening is the patient suffers, right? I don't really care about perio maintenance money, guys. It's not a money thing for me. That's why I was just more comfortable just getting rid of it. I would rather see the patient go somewhere every 3 months. You know, and that's fine wherever they go, but I just don't, you know, I was just like, just stick to your dentist, go to your dentist every 3 months. His hygienist is probably just as good as my hygienist. And if you ever have a problem, come see me.
That's honestly probably a pretty good referral builder too, from, because I'm sure.
Well, and it's less staff drama for you.
Less staff drama. Cause let's face it. I mean, most of the hygienists around these parts are kind of like what my wife would do, right? They would, they're going to temp, or they're going to work two or three different jobs, right? Yeah. And, you know, let's just, without sounding, you know, sexist or anything like that, the majority of them are females. The majority of them are going to probably want to have a family at some point.
In Oklahoma, they come to work on a horse.
You start bouncing around, you know, they have life that gets involved. And they, you know, they're part-time employees. And, you know, it's just hard. It's hard to manage a team whenever you have, a fun dedicated team, and then you have, two or three different hygienists that, split the whole week up, between them, and they take off and all, it just got to be a hassle.
Absolutely.
To where I was just like, screw it. Everybody go home. We're not doing hygiene anymore. Just go back to your dentist. Call me if you need me. And then the other model I leaned on was, most of the procedures I do anyway are probably closer to oral surgery type things. And I was like, I don't know any oral surgeons that have a hygienist. So,
you know what?
That's if they don't need one, then I don't need one either.
That's a trend that how periodontists are now starting doing better oral surgery than a lot of oral surgeons.
I'd much rather have
absolutely.
And nothing against oral surgery or anything, but I feel like when they go through the 4, 5, 6 years of residency and trauma in hospitals, they don't appreciate that delicate soft tissue.
Absolutely.
Or some of these stuff, because all they've done is fixing up craziness and not really doing some minor or plastic surgery, grafting and things. So
the last question, because I don't want to get into a perioral surgery discussion.
Yeah.
Is from the Gum Show, forget about the perio, ask him about his fitness regimen and where he finds, how he finds time for the gym.
I got that
dude
a lot
is
too
ripped.
As a DM.
So that's the last question.
Yes.
Tell us, give us your fitness regimen. And then Dad, I think, has one question.
So I'm not a total fitness buff or guru. I'm not qualified to give anybody advice. But what I do is I'm more of a weight trainer, so I go whenever I'm in town. So if I'm in town, I'll go to the gym every day that I can. So this week, as an example, I just got back into town. So I worked out Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yesterday, I had a thing with the kids. Tonight, I have you guys. Tomorrow, I'm leaving for Charlotte. So I won't work out again until Sunday. So it's just whenever I can. I don't bring my shit to the gym at the hotel. I'm not one of those guys.
Yeah.
I don't pack my food and, bring, containers of chicken and broccoli everywhere. I don't do that either. So I just work out whenever I can. And I mostly lift weights. I do light cardio.
Maybe three times a week. You eat pretty healthy?
No, I don't. I mean, I eat relatively healthy, but I eat a lot of food. So I do, that's probably my big thing is I just eat a ton of food. I don't eat hardly any vegetables like I should. But also I probably don't eat a whole lot of carbs either. That's mostly a protein and fat and, a few carbs here and there, but I eat okay. I eat okay. I'm not terrible, but yeah, to answer the person's question, I go to the gym. If I was in town, I would probably go to the gym 5 days a week. But I'm not hardly ever in town, so I probably, on average, go 3.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, I've followed your Instagram since I saw you speak back in Vegas 3 or 4 years ago. And I've noticed that part of giving back, your office does a really cool thing where you do free treatment to like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning or something. How does that work? Tell us about that a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I used to do a CE course, right, every year, and I would ask for donations. And for the first year I did, it was probably maybe six or seven years ago. And I had like $10,000 donations. The second year I did, it got like $8,000 donations. And by the time, about 3 years ago, we got donations dwindled down to about $5,000. And it was feeling terrible to me because, we were given free CE and I would give the same lecture to my referring doctors and their staffs as I would get paid to go to like a Sirona World or something like that.
Sure.
Right. So I'm putting all this time and effort into it. I'm only getting, $5,000 to go to charity. And it was getting less and less. So finally, I was like, you know what? We've got this backlog of patients. I don't need more money in my life. And it was stressing me out that patients were getting booked out, 3, 4, 5 months, for a freaking extraction, So it was stressing me out because a lot of times they would just find somebody else to pull their tooth. So we started doing what we call a periothon, where we just work from, at the time we worked from 8:30 in the morning until 2 in the morning. So we would, I don't know how many hours that is, but it's whatever. It was just a long day. So we'd work till 2 in the morning, just seeing patients. And then everything that we earned, collected after 5 p.m., we would just donate to charity. So I would just have the girls just load up the schedule, and it was nice. I mean, we'd end up with a check, for 15, 20 grand or whatever to our favorite charity. And I didn't have to go to my referring doctors for it. I didn't have to go to any dental supply companies or anything like that. Of course, you know, I didn't get to keep it for myself, but I didn't really care, honestly, because it was, you know, some of these patients were booked so far out, they may not have ever showed up anyway, honestly.
All right, Sully, so, that we need to broadcast the Millennial Dentist dental dentathon some point this year. It'd be kind of fun to do. Inspired by Dr. Wong.
A DIA 2.0.
Yeah. Well, Doc, I really appreciate
for us to just donate.
I really appreciate your hanging out with us tonight. I know, you know, as much as you're traveling and all that with your family, it means a lot that you take some time away. And so this has been great.
It's been a great, yeah.
It's been a while
since we had a periodontist on the show.
I know, I was just thinking that actually. I'd love to do another episode.
We'd love to maybe do it in person. We can't wait for your lecture at DIA. Tell us again one more time your title and what you're wanting to do, because that's going to be amazing what he's going to talk about.
Yeah, so the neat thing about DIA this year, there are some periodontists speaking, some amazing guys speaking on a bunch of different topics. So a lot of the guys are speaking about traditional grafting. Some of the guys are, you know, going more into, you know, implants and that type of stuff.
GBR.
I'm doing a root coverage talk, you know, basically treatments for gingival recession, and it's entitled Just Say No to the Palate. So we're talking about
treatment
alternatives to using the palate. So that's what I'm going
to
be doing.
Just say no to the palate.
Very nice.
Yeah,
very
nice. That makes me kind of intrigued.
Well, for anybody that is listening, if you're not following two accounts, Plaque China and David, is it David.wong or?
It's David.wong.dds.
David.wong.dds and Millennial Dentist and Tennessee Gunmaster, right?
TN Gunmaster.
TN Gunmaster.
That's just me and me.
And though, of course,
I've got a new account to follow. See, I need to do that.
Yes, TN, yeah. If you're not to learn about guns and Tennessee. What else? In Tennessee. And
grandkids.
And at Dr. Perry. Everybody, work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.